Welcome to the Simple Money, Simple Life podcast. I'm Matt Erickson and I'm your host. This is a podcast where we explore how simplicity beats complexity, especially in money matters. We explore investing, personal finance, and how to live a simple and awesome life. Welcome to episode 7, titled, What Portfolio is Right for Me? And hope you guys are all doing great. I'm excited to bring you another podcast today in Utah. It is a beautiful fall day with beautiful blue skies and golden and red leaves on the trees and just a beautiful season. I hope wherever you might be listening to this podcast that you can take a minute to enjoy the surroundings wherever you might be and look around and enjoy the beauty of this world. It's a great opportunity and brings a lot of happiness to me to just notice the beauty around me. And here in Utah, it's certainly easy to do, especially this time of year. I'm excited to get to talk about the topic of what portfolio might be right for you. I'm going to later in the podcast talk about three different portfolios that you could consider that are simple, easy to implement, and you will understand at the conclusion of this episode. So the first one I call the J.L. Collins portfolio. The second one is the Three Fund Boglehead portfolio. And the last one is my portfolio, which is the one I've constructed for myself. So before we get into discovering what exactly those portfolios consist of, I want to talk a little bit about what constructs a good portfolio. So when you put together your investment portfolio, you want to have different asset classes in your portfolio. So let me give you what the asset classes are that you could add to your portfolio. So we have stocks, bonds, cash, real estate, and commodities. I think I've defined all of those terms. Commodities would be things like gold, silver, precious metals, natural resources. I think I've defined the other terms on other podcasts. So to have a good portfolio, you want to have a balance of all of these asset classes in your portfolio. The next thing you want to think about is figuring out what you want your asset allocation to be. An asset allocation is the implementation of an investment strategy that attempts to balance risk versus reward by adjusting the percentage of each asset in an investment portfolio according to the investor's risk tolerance, goals, and investment time frame. So let me kind of explain what that means. So for a young investor, I think it's great to have your stock, your portfolio in 100% stocks. Stocks have typically, historically, had a higher rate of return than the other asset classes. So it would certainly make sense for a 20-year-old, a 30-year-old, probably even a 40-year-old to have 100% in stocks, even though that portfolio is going to be much more volatile, have much more ups and downs, be more of a roller coaster ride. At the end of the day, the end result will be a higher return because you're getting rewarded for the risk you're taking. Now, as you get older, it might be wiser to put in some other asset classes into your portfolio, such as if one is getting closer to retirement, they're probably going to want to put more bonds in their portfolio to provide a ballast, to provide some more stability. Bonds do not go, they're not nearly as volatile as stocks are. They do not go up and down nearly as much, and they provide a nice balance to a stock portfolio. So most people, when they're in retirement, have a blend of all these asset classes that I just talked about. So during the accumulation stage, that's the stage where you're accumulating assets, you're young, you're wanting to grow your portfolio. So that's a great time to take more risk in your portfolio. When you're in the withdrawal stage of life, which is obviously during your retirement years, whatever that age is, I think it's a little wiser to have a more balanced approach to your portfolio and not have 100% stocks necessarily. So when you're constructing a portfolio, it's important to think about what kinds of stocks do you want in there. So in a previous episode, we talked about the difference between large cap, small cap, value, and growth. So I think it's wise to have large company stocks in your portfolio, mid cap and small cap companies in your stock, and also value companies and growth companies. Research by two gentlemen named Eugene Fama and Kenneth French, who are both academians at University of Chicago and Dartmouth, I believe. Anyway, they are a couple of brilliant guys who study this for a living. And they have found through research that typically over long periods of time, stocks that are more value companies and also smaller companies tend to outperform the larger growth companies. Now, during the last 10 years, it's been the opposite of that. The growth companies have done much better than the value companies. The big companies have done better than the small companies. But what Fahm and French teach is that over an investment lifetime, if you have more value and small in your portfolio, then you might have a good chance of having higher returns. And the reason why is because the value companies, smaller companies, are riskier assets. When you have a riskier asset in your portfolio, you should get a risk premium, which means that you take more risk, you should expect more return and also more volatility. So another term you need to understand as you construct your own portfolio is the term standard deviation. Standard deviation is how the investment world typically explains risk. So what standard deviation is a statistical measure of market volatility, measuring how widely prices are dispersed from the average price. If prices trade in a narrow trading range, the standard deviation will return a low value that indicates low volatility. The higher the score, the higher the risk and volatility. So I hope that makes sense. So if you ever are nerdy about investments like I am and look up on Fidelity.com or Morningstar.com, two great resources to research mutual funds and index funds, one thing you can see on there is the standard deviation score, which says how volatile or how much it goes up and down. So the higher the standard deviation score, the more volatile and possibly the higher reward you will get. So for example, I've talked about the Total Stock Market Index Fund through Fidelity or Vanguard. This has 3,500 different U.S. companies in it, constructed of both value and growth companies, both large, mid, and small cap companies. The standard deviation for the total U.S. stock market is 18.47, so it's quite high. They also make a total international index fund, which consists of all the publicly traded companies outside of the United States. So you're getting coverage from Australia, New Zealand, China, Russia, Chile, Brazil, Canada, Mexico. And the standard deviation for the total international is 16.23, so a little bit lower volatility than the U.S. stock market index. Now, if you take a total bond market index, we've talked about bonds. They are debt instruments. They have a much lower standard deviation and much less volatility, so there's much more stability in your portfolio. The standard deviation for the total bond market index is 4.0. So it's important to consider the volatility, because if you're going to be in a 100% stock portfolio like I have, you have to understand that your portfolio is going to go up and down. It's going to be kind of like a yo-yo, a man or a woman using a yo-yo while walking up a hill. There will be a lot of volatility and a lot of up and down, but will continue to grow over the years. So if you can stomach that and you won't be tempted to tinker with it, mess with it, jump out of it when the market goes down, it's a great idea to have a 100% stock portfolio when you're younger. Some believe in doing something called tilting a portfolio. So they might tilt it based on academic research that has been done that has shown, for example, what I said earlier, like smaller companies might return more than larger companies over time, or value companies might do better than growth. So some factor investing might be based on the size of the company, value versus growth, and something called momentum, which means investing into things that have current momentum. So some people might overweight a portfolio or put a higher percentage into it, into value companies or small companies, because of this academic research. So for those looking for a simple strategy, which I advocate on this podcast, simply getting a total market index fund is a great way to go, because they cover value companies, growth companies, big, large, and big, middle, and small companies. Now, when you buy a total market index fund, they also have sectors, which means there's different sectors of the economy that go into a total market index fund. So the sectors that are encapsulated in this fund are the energy sector, consumer staples, which means food and toothpaste and things of that nature, consumer discretionary, technology, industrials, real estate, telecommunications, basic materials, financials, utilities, and healthcare. So there's, I think I just named maybe 12 different sectors that all are part of a total market index fund. So you can tell it's very diversified. There's all kinds of different companies that make up one of these funds, which gives you a chance to invest in all these different companies around the United States. Now, I just talked about diversification. What diversification is it's a risk management strategy that makes a wide variety of investments within a portfolio. So a diversified portfolio contains a mix of distinct asset classes and investment vehicles in an attempt at limiting exposure to any single asset or risk. The rationale behind this technique is that a portfolio constructed of different kinds of assets will, on average, have long-term returns, better long-term returns, and lower the risk of any individual holding or security. So, for example, if you have a portfolio of Apple and Amazon, and that's all you have in your portfolio, that's not very diversified. You're putting all of your eggs in one basket. You're basically committing to one or two different companies. That is not very diversified because they're just two companies. They're both growth companies and they're both big companies. On the other hand, if you have a total market index fund, you have all different kinds of companies, all different sectors, different sizes, different types. Diversification helps you so you're not putting all your eggs in one basket. And over time, a diversified portfolio will go up and down less typically than a non-diversified portfolio, and it will typically also return more. So having diversification in your portfolio is very important. Some people get confused because they think, well, I only have one mutual fund or one total market index fund. Am I diversified? I would argue that 3,500 companies in your portfolio is good diversification. Some people feel that that's not good enough for them, so they want to beat the market, or they want to add some wealthier people think, I'm smarter than this. I need something special. So they'll hire a fund manager that invests in something called a hedge fund. So what a hedge fund is, unlike mutual funds, hedge fund managers actively manage investment portfolios with a goal of absolute returns regardless of the overall market or index movements. They also conduct their trading strategies with more freedom than a mutual fund, typically avoiding registration with the Securities and Exchange Commission. So they have more freedom to invest in things that aren't just publicly traded companies. Now, you would think that since they have this freedom, they're able to make more money. However, the average hedge fund currently charges a management fee of 1.5% and a 17% performance fee, which means they charge 1.5% a year on all the investments in the fund, plus 17% of any growth or performance they have. So typically hedge funds do not make as much as a simple total market index fund, and they're much more expensive. And they provide millions of dollars for the hedge fund managers who use them. Now, another thing to keep in mind, Fidelity did a study between 2003 and 2013 to figure out who are the best investors. What they found out were the best investors were either dead or inactive, according to this study. The inactive accounts were people who forgot about their portfolios or 401ks, and the dead people are obviously dead. They left the inactive people, they left their current options in place, obviously, and the dead people had their assets frozen while the estate was sorting it out. So what that tells us is that people who leave their portfolios alone and don't mess with them are the kinds of people who typically make the highest rate of return. Those who get in there, trade, sell, buy, tinker, change, adjust, are the ones who typically make a lot less. And if you really dive into the weeds, you can research a mutual fund and it will show you that what the average investor makes versus what the fund makes. and the fund often makes double what the average investor in the fund makes because of the jumping in and out of the fund. In investing, you always have to keep in mind the behavioral components of fear and greed. They drive a lot of human behavior when it comes to investments. So when a 2008 situation comes along or a pandemic like COVID-19 comes along, people get scary. That's the fear. And they will often sell and get out of the market because they're scared of what might happen. Other times people get greedy when the market's doing really well and they take more risk than they should. So my strategy is to try to understand that all of us are wired to have fear and greed be a part of us. So as we become aware of that, we'll make sure that we put methods in place so that we don't sell investments when the pandemic comes along or when the great financial crisis comes along. But we stay the course, we take a deep breath, we stay invested, and we don't change our strategy. Most people are wired to want to buy what's currently hot. And if you buy what's currently hot, that typically is the most expensive investment you can buy. It's much wiser typically to buy investments that are not hot or that might be down. So it's important to find your investment strategy and stick with it. Now, as promised, I was going to discuss three different investment portfolios that you can consider for yourself. The number one portfolio that I talked about was the J.L. Collins portfolio. Now, this is based off the book that I referred to in the last episode called The Simple Path to Wealth. J.L. Collins suggests that you simply buy a total market index fund and invest into that one fund throughout your whole career, and that when you get close to retirement, you start to split it up between the total market index fund and the total bond index market fund. You have one or two funds for your entire life. That's what he advocates for. It's very simple, it's very effective, it's very easy to implement, has a lot of diversification. He explains in his book why it's good, and I agree with him. Now, the three-fund portfolio called the Boglehead portfolio is a mix of a total market index fund, a total international index fund, and a total bond index fund. So the Bogleheads is a group online that have a financial forum that is free that you can learn about investing. And what they advocate for is that it's important to both have U.S. exposure and international exposure, because half of the market cap is overseas and outside of the United States. So some people advocate that you should have 50% in U.S., 50% in international, and the Bogleheads more say that you should have 20 to 30% in international and not all in the U.S. And the reason they say that is because they say people have what's called home country bias, where you invest too heavily in your home country that you live in. And this bias happens all around the world. And the example they give of why you shouldn't do this is because what happened in Japan in 1990, when their economy went for 30 years up until now without really making money. And so if you would have only been invested in Japan, you would have been completely out of luck. So that's one of the reasons why I think it's important to invest both in your home country, the United States, and internationally. So, however, for those who are just getting started for their first, you know, $50,000 to $100,000, I think investing simply in a U.S. total market index fund is fine. And lastly, my portfolio, which I explained in a previous episode, is I have basically 50% of my U.S. in large cap or S&P 500 fund, 50% in a mid cap fund. And then I also invest, sorry, that's not quite accurate because that's in my 401k, but my total is I typically divide it by, I have large company, mid company, and small company index funds. I have three of them. And I typically keep those pretty equally distributed. And I also have a total international index fund, which is only about 15 to 20% of my portfolio. So if you take all those stocks together, you probably have 7,000 or 8,000 company stocks in that basic portfolio. So I think any of those three portfolios are great. Now, if you're a person who has sold stocks or part of your index fund when the market goes down it's probably wise for you to have bonds in your portfolio even at a young age. If you're one who can just set it and forget it, not worry about it, not even look at it that often, or if you do, not sell when the market is down, I think 100% stock portfolio during the first few decades of your life is a great way to go. So choosing a strategy at a young age is a great thing to do, and then just sticking with it. One of the mistakes I've made over my life is I've tinkered with this strategy or that strategy. I haven't sold when the market was down or during the 08 crisis or the 01 crisis. I never sold, but I've made the mistake of adding this strategy or that strategy, more of this or more of that. I wish I would have just chosen a strategy in my 20s and stuck with it through my lifetime. So the strategy I have now, I am going to stick with it, which is a combination of all index funds with international exposure. And when I get closer to retirement, I'll add some bond index funds into the mix. That will be all for today's episode. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the podcast. Please go to your favorite podcast platform and leave a 5-star review and subscribe to the show. You can follow the show on Instagram at simplemoney_simplelife. And remember, the simple life is a good life.